Tonight's shiur in Parshas Shoftim. We have the pasuk, the commandment, Lo tsasur min hadavar asher yagidu lecha yamin u'smol, that you're not supposed to go away from what the Rabbanim tell you, not to the right and not to the left. So Rashi says, what does it mean, not to the right, not to the left? Rashi says, Afilu omer lecha al yamin shu smol, v'al smol shu yamin. Even if the Rav tells you that your right is your left and your left is your right, you have to accept it. So once a person came to Rav Galinsky and he said, Ma pitom, he said, that's ridiculous. He says, I know which is my right and which is my left, and a thousand rabbis are not going to be able to change that. This is my right and this is my left. How can the Torah command me to accept something which is sheker? I mean, this is right and left. I know what's my right and my left. I have to accept what the Rav tells me. It makes no sense. So if Galinsky said, calm down, says, I'll explain it to you. Notice, it doesn't say, Rashi doesn't say, based on the pasuk, it doesn't say that even if the rabbi tells you that the west is east, or the east is west. It doesn't say that. Or it doesn't say if the rabbi tells you that the day is night, or the night is day. Right? Rabbi doesn't tell you, it doesn't say that either. What does it say? Right and left. Meaning what? Says, let's say the rabbi tells you, I want you to go right, and he points to the north. Go to the right. North. So what does the person do? He starts going to the left. So meaning, that person's right. So the rabbi said, which is to the south. So the rabbi says, hey, where are you going? I want you to go this way, to the north. He says, yeah, but you told me to go to the right. And I'm going to my right. He says, yeah, you're going to your right because you're facing opposite me. And therefore, your right is towards the south. But I want, if you're facing my direction, I want you to go to the north, which is my right. Me, the right and left, it all depends on what direction you're facing. So what the Torah is telling you, that if the rabbi tells you that you should go to the right, and you go to the other direction, it's you're saying, hey, he told me to go right. This is why it's not. What is he telling me to go that? Terence says, you're not, it's all because you're facing opposite the Rav. If you'd be facing in his direction and going with him, so then you'd be going in the right direction. So that's the limud. And we have to make sure we are facing the same way as the Rav. As many times we think the Rav is making a mistake, he doesn't know what he's doing, what he's talking about, that's because we're facing opposite. We're not in his wavelength. If we would be holding where he is and facing in his direction, and we'd be going there in the right direction. It brings from Rav Shalom Shvadron explanation of a Gemara based using this. Gemara says in Shvuas Davav Amud Beis that once Rava wanted to give a mashal about something, and he said, "Mashal amad davar domer, what is this likened to? Lishvor Malka v'Kesar, etc., etc." Now, Shvar Malka is the king of Persia, and Caesar is the Caesar of Rome. Now, Rapapa was listening to this, and he said, excuse me, Rava, who is more chashuv? Who's more chashuv here, the king of Persia or the Caesar? So Rava said, what kind of a question is that? What, do you live in the forest that you're asking such a question? That's the expression he used. He says, it's a pasuk in Daniel. It says, "V'seichul kol ara u'sadushina v'sadkina," and Amar Rabbi Yochanan zuromi harasha shetiva yotze b'chol olam kulo. That the Rome rulership expands the whole world. So we see that Rome is greater. So what are you asking? So Rashi over there explains, in fact, okay, why did Rav Papa ask? So he asked because, in fact, Rava, when he gave his example, he put the Persian king of Persia first. He said the king of Persia and the Caesar. So since he mentioned it first, so therefore, Rav Papa asked the question. Now, we learn from here two things. First of all, everybody knows that the Caesar is greater, that Rome is greater than Persia. But what happened, as soon as Rava said first, the king of Persia, so then Rapapa said, oh, wait a minute, that doesn't make any sense. So, but maybe the reason why it doesn't make sense, because I'm standing opposite Rava, in other words, I'm not on his wavelength. Maybe if I'd be holding where he's holding, and seeing things the way he thinks, maybe it's not the way I see things. It seems to me obvious that Rome is greater, but it could be I'm opposite Rava. And therefore, he didn't just say, oh, Rava's wrong. He asked him, excuse me, why'd you put, who's greater, in fact? I thought Rome is greater. Is that true? Maybe not. Which is what we've been speaking about. And another point, Agav, he says we learn from here, that even something which might be well known to everybody, but it's not a fact until it's a pasuk in the Torah, or in the Nach, right? So we need a pasuk. And therefore, everybody knew it was in the history books that Rome is greater. So, but what did Rava say? It's a pasuk in Daniel. Meaning, he didn't just say, well, look, everybody knows, look in the books. That's not, everybody could seemingly know something, but unless it's a pasuk, it's not a fact. Let me bring some other examples that Gemara says in Brachas that there's ein lecha davar shemevi yelala al ha'adam el yain. There's nothing that makes you drunk like wine. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, v'yesh min ha'yain v'yishkar, and Noach drank from the wine and he got drunk. She says, again, what we need a pasuk for? We don't know a person drinks, he gets drunk. What, we need a pasuk for that? Yeah, it says it's not a pasuk. Yeah, because even though it seems like a davar yadua, of course you drink and get drunk. But only a pasuk makes it into a fact. Another example: minayin she'or hachama mafziya lechol aver. How do we know that the sunlight spreads out all over? What do you mean? What do you mean? How do I know? Look, the sun's all over the place. Ah, as it says the Gemara in Yoma, pasuk says la matzeach ala yeles hashachar ma ayala zu karneha mafzila. Just like the horns of a ayala of the ram are. It goes in all directions. Av shachar zeh mavtziya lekan lekan. So the sunlight goes all over. We need a pasuk. Back to the Indian we mentioned of accepting what the Rav says and realizing that if we see things opposite, it's because we're standing opposite. He brings a little maisa from the Chelkas Yoav. The Chelkas Yoav was a Talmud of the Avnei Nezer. And he once sent to his Rebbe a shaila in a chiddush that he had in Hilchas Shabbos. It's brought down in his tshuvas of Chelkas Yoav, Norachaim Simen Yoy. So what happened? Avnei Nezer received his Talmud's chiddush, and he rejected it. He didn't agree with it. So he sent back that, I don't agree with what you're saying. In fact, the Avnei Nezer writes about it, Norachaim Simen Nun Ches. So what happens? Later on, one day he met his Rebbe, when the Chelkas Yoav met the Avnei Nezer, so the Rebbe said to him, "Nu, so what do you say? I sent you back that I disagreed with your Chiddush. What do you say about that?" So he said, "I'm a Kabbal Adas of Rebbe." The Rebbe, fine. "You said that it's wrong. I'm a Kabbal. So the Avnei Nezer says, "Okay, but tell me, what do you feel in your heart?" And he says, "In my heart, I feel that I'm still right." So the Avnei Nezer got up. He was all upset. And he said, "V'chizeh karui mora rabach kemora shemaim." It says in Pirkei Avos that the fear of your Rebbe has to be like the fear of shemaim. So in other words, if the Rav says something that's different the way you have to not say, "Well, I still think I'm right, but okay, I'll accept it." No, you have to know that what the Rebbe's saying is right and accept it, not think that you're right. Kemora Rabba, Kemora Shammai. Pasuk says, "Tamim tiye im Hashem Elokecha." Included in this, he says, is what David Melech says in Tilim, "Kol mitzvasecha emuna, sheker ridafuni ozreini." The Malbim explains that the yisod of all mitzvahs is to believe that there's a mitzvah, somebody that's commanding to do the mitzvahs, and not to delve into it, why is it like this and this and no, whatever, but accept it with the emuna. As kol mitzvasecha emuna, David Melech said. But what happens? Along come some people and say, "Yeah, that sheker, you have to be philosophical and investigate and why and this and that." And they say, "Sheker." David HaMelech says, "Ridafuni, they're running after me. So Hashem Azraini, help me. Because I know the Iker is to have emuna." So we have to realize that even similar, like we said before, things we don't understand, we have to realize that Hashem, who saw the whole world and the whole history and what's going to be, so whatever he wrote, it was based on the whole picture, which he knows, which he saw, and therefore we have to accept everything that Hashem knows what he's doing. Kitzer. And even though it might seem contrary to us, I mean, we might want to change things. It's what you think you're doing, something positive, some change or whatever. If they realize that if Hashem didn't say it, it's not something positive. It brings a story from the Sabba Mi Navardak. It says there was once a king. They called over the minister of finance, Tsar Otsar, and he said, "Listen, I've been working with this neighboring kingdom for a while to open up our connections with each other, with our business connections, and to open the doors between the two nations so we can have commerce, etc. And Baruch Hashem, it seems like we've come to the final conclusion, we can sign the deal. And so I'd like you to go there and to be the representative of our kingdom and to sign." So he said, "It'd be my honor." He says, "Good, except just one thing I just want to tell you before you go. Make sure that you do not get into any bets with the people over there." So he says, "Bets?" He says, "When do I gamble? I never gamble. Why would the king even think that I would do such a thing and make go?" He goes, "Listen, those people there I know are very into that. And I just don't want you to, I command you, don't get involved with anything to do with bets and deals and things like that." So he says, "Okay, fine. No, I wasn't planning on it." Okay. So he arrives there, and they bring out the shtar for the signing, and they make like a whole like party out of it, festivity, and they're drinking, having a good time. So the minister of defense of the other country says, "I just like to mention that I'm very happy that we're getting together, the two nations, and I'd like to let you know, Mr. Minister of Commerce, of Finance, that even though you were working things out in your country in secret, but thanks to our wonderful spies, we knew everything that was going on in your office. Everything." So he says, "What? What are you talking about? You didn't know anything going on. There's nobody in our office except my closest men, and they are far from being spies, and I don't know what you're talking about. You're making this thing up." So he says, "No, not at all. In fact, we know everything about you, everything. Ad kedei kach, we even know that on your body is a birthmark. And it's in the shape of a star, and it has five corners to it on your body. That's how much we know about you through our spies." So he says, "Ha! That's exactly perfect proof that what you're saying is ridiculous, because it's not true. I know I don't have a birthmark like that." And he says, "Yes, you do. Our spies told us that you do." He says, "No, I don't." So they said, "Okay, we'll make a bet with you. We bet you have this birthmark. And if we're wrong, we'll pay you $100,000. He says, $100,000? He says, "Yeah." So he started thinking to himself. He goes, "I know I don't have a birthmark like that. It's obvious." So he figures, the king told me, though, I shouldn't make any bets. But come on, this is a sure win and nothing to discuss over here, I know. So he says, "Okay, fine. I'll prove it to you I don't." He goes, "Good, show us." So he took off his shirt, and showed his back, his front, took off his pants, his socks, his shoes, took off all his clothes. And he's standing there naked. And see, no birthmark like that. So the Minister of Defense says, "Wow, okay, you're right, you got us. I really thought, okay, you win, I'm sorry." So he says, "Okay, so hand over the $100,000. He goes, 100%, a deal's a deal. And he filled up a suitcase, $100,000, and gave it to the Minister of Finance. So he said, "Listen, I'm representing my country. I'm not going to keep the money for myself. I'm going to give it to the king, my king." And he left. So he got back, goes to the king. He says, "King, I have a nice present for you. And here's a suitcase with $100,000. He goes, "$100,000? Where'd you get that from?" He says, "Well, I got it from a bet I made with them, and I won, hands down, no problem. And here's it. He goes, what? But I told you not to make any bets. He says, King, I know, but this was not a bet, you know, maybe going to win, maybe going to lose. This was, I knew I was going to win. I bring you $100,000. And he told him what the bet was, what happened. So he goes, oh, you fool. He says, why? He says, if you wouldn't have known what was... He said, before you left, the other country approached me and said, you know, it would be nice if you can come for the signing of this agreement. And I told the other country, listen, I'm busy, whatever, I can't come. But I'll send my Sar Otsar, my Minister of Finance, and he'll sign for us. So you know what they said? Don't send him. The guy's an idiot. It's not going to bring any respect to your country. Why would you send such a person? So I told him, what do you mean? He's a very respectable guy. And he goes, well, a very respectable guy. He's such a fool. We can make him undress in front of all the Sarim over here. And he said, the king, and I said to him, what are you? No way. He's an honorable person. He would never do such a thing. And they said to me, oh, yeah? Says, if we make him undress in front of us, then you give us $10 million, okay? So he said, no problem. I'll give you $10 million of my Sar Haotsar. You'll get undressed in front of you. How could you say such a thing? And therefore I sent you. And I had a feeling you're not going to do such a great, I know you, but I told you, just in case, don't make any bets. I don't want to lose $10 million. So here, what happened in the end? Here, you undressed in front of them. You came back. You thought, oh, great, I bring back $100,000. You get $100,000, but you made me lose $10 million. So Mela, same thing. When we think, oh, I'm going to do this. Do this mitzvah. Do this thing. Okay, it's better this way. It's better this way. Hashem says, you think you're making a great cheshbonus. You're bringing me $100,000. You're making me lose $10 million. You don't realize all the ramifications. And then brings a, that was of course a mashal, he brings a Maisa Shehaya, true story, happened rather recently. There was an Avreich that here in Eretz Yisrael, that Lolein, he had a very rare disease in the stomach. And there's nobody here, no doctors that were able to take care of him here. So he was suggested to go to America to have a tipul over there. So the only problem was that he didn't speak any English, only Hebrew, and to get around there, you have to, you know. So the Chesed organization in America said, no problem, we'll have somebody be with them to translate or whatever, and the whole time. So that's what happened. As soon as he arrived over there in the airport, already somebody was waiting for them from in America, and with a wheelchair, brought him straight to the hospital. So the important first meeting was with the head of the department, where you know he had to have the tipulim. So he they went there, and it happened to be that the head of the department was a lady doctor. So this Malaveh was discussing with the doctor, you know, all the things in English, you know, and just Avreich didn't know, understand a word of what was going on. He was sitting there, whatever, and discussing, and then all of a sudden, this lady doctor says, like, has like a look of surprise on her face, and she walks over to this Avreich, you know, sitting there in the wheelchair, and she sticks out her hand to him, to say, as if to say, Shalom Aleichem, you know, shake his hand. So the Avreich was shocked, because he didn't know what to do. You know, here was the whole thing. He just came, you know, a long trip, and his disease, and leaving his family, and this and that, and coming to this strange hospital, strange language, and now here's the head of the department that has to make a decision about him, what to do, whatever. And she's innocently putting out her hand to shake his hand. So he said, what should I do? If I'm going to, you know, not shake her hand, she might take it the wrong way. And then this is the woman who's supposed to decide my future over here, my life. So he thought maybe I could be Makel or whatever, but he decided, no, I'm going to do what I'm supposed to do. So he tells his Malave, he says, with a smile on his face, he says, please tell this doctor, you know, with all due respect and my apologies, but I nothing personal, I just don't shake hands with women. Yeah. So the Malave doesn't even say anything, and the doctor sits down, and that's that. So he turned to me, he says, I don't understand, I told you to tell her. He said, no, I didn't have to tell her anything. He says, what do you mean? He said, you didn't understand what we were discussing, but when we were discussing the whole situation, I was telling her that, you know, when we're going to be doing, you're going to have to undergo tests, you know, blood tests and read your pulse and all these different things. So I told her that if you can please find male nurses to do so, because, you know, you're very careful that you don't like to, you know, have other women, like having women touch you, whatever. So she was shocked. She says, I never heard of such a thing. I can't believe there's such a thing that, you know, a person is so careful and so sneistic, you know, that would be like that. She said, I never heard of such a thing. So she said, let me see. So that's why she got up and offered her hand. She wanted to see whether you're going to shake her hand. And he said, Baruch Hashem, you passed the test. Have the psukim relate when a person, when the Klal Yisrael goes out to war, there's certain individuals that come back and don't have to go out to fight, and they are announced by the Kohen and says, "Mi aish asher bana bayit chadash v'lo chanacho yalech v'yashol beitzo pen yamus b'milchama v'yishach yachnechenu." A person built a house and he didn't mechanech it yet. Some say it means he didn't put a mezuzah on, that he goes back to from the war front. He doesn't have to fight. He hasn't yet been mechanech his house. And then it says, also, that a person who planted a kerem and hasn't reached the fourth year yet, or has reached the fourth year and hasn't mechalal his kerem, so penya muspa milchama, he goes back lest he die also, and somebody else, yishacher yechalalim, and somebody else is going to be mechalal his kerem. Let's say somebody got engaged and not married yet. Also goes back, why? Pain again, lest he die and somebody else marry her. So we have three examples of the house, building a house, being chalakerim, getting married, where a person goes back from the war, lest somebody else takes over and does these things, and therefore he's allowed to go back. So he says, I don't understand. So if he dies in the war, who cares if somebody else is going to be mechanech his house or take over his care or marry his wife for that matter? He's dead. Well, what's the difference? So Rashi says, Davar shel agmas nefesh uzeh. Says it's something which is agmas nefesh. It causes sorrow, a person to be upset. But again, what's upsetting over here? He's gonna die, and somebody will take over. So what? You're not alive anyways. It's not like somebody's gonna take over your care while you're alive. That's upsetting. But why is it upsetting if it's after a person dies? So he says an interesting idea. He says if a person is chalila on his deathbed, so what should a person be thinking about? Tshuva. I mean, that's it. He's got a few more moments left in this world, so take advantage of it and do tshuva. The tshuva it says on his deathbed, it's mechaper for everything. So that's what he should be osik in. Now, if a person instead of that is osik in other worldly things, oy vavoylo, he's wasted his last moments in this world. And therefore, that's what the psukim are telling us. A person, if he built a house and he didn't mechanech it, what were we worried about? That here he is, he gets, let's say, shot on the war front, and he's dying of his wounds. What is he gonna be worried about? Oh no, agmas nefesh, he's gonna be all upset. Why? Oh, somebody's gonna take my house. Oh no. So that's a very sorrowful situation. Instead of doing tshuva, what is he worried about? Somebody's gonna take his house, or somebody's going to mechal his kerem, or somebody's gonna take his wife. He said, that's what you're worried about? You should be doing tshuva, not worried about these other things. In fact, the Chazal say that the worst death is the death of dying of thirst. Why? So they explain, because when a person's dying of thirst, instead of thinking about his last moments of tshuva, what does he think about? Oh, I need a drink. Anything, please, I need a drink. That's when he's dying, thinking, oh, I need a drink, instead of doing tshuva. So therefore, that's why it's the worst of the deaths. It brings here a mice that happened with Rav Shach, Tzatzal, in Slotsk. He says there was a yid that was very, very miserly, big kamtzan, big miser. he's put away his money and didn't touch it. And he himself, he was he wore torn and like ripped clothing, and he hardly ate anything. All his food was all moldy. He wouldn't, you know, throw it out, and so he kept it until it was moldy. It mamish affected his health until he was about to die. So they called a minyan together to be there for his yetzias neshama when he's gonna, you know, last moments. And to read with him Kriyat Shema, etc., etc. And it happens to be Rav Shach, he was one of the minyan. Rav Shach was there at the time. So Rav Shach recalls, with his last bit of strength, he calls over to the guy from the Chevra Kedisha who's there, and he says, tells him, my tachrichim, and I have some dirt from Eretz Yisrael, no, they won't put it in the kever, I have them and they're in my safe. So he says, you know, so you know, we should get it. So he says, fine, where do you have the key? Can I have the key? So, okay, he has to give him the key, you know, from his safe. And his safe is all the money he's been saving up, you know, his whole life. So he reaches under his pillow, whatever, takes the key in his hands, he's shaking, and, you know, as he's handing it over to the guy from the Hever Kedisha. And as he's handing it over to him, he says to him, "Ober ziz doch meine." He says, "Aval zeh harei shali." Remember, that's my money, and it's my money in the safe. And as he was saying, "It's mine," he died on those words. So you have an example. What a waste! Right, his last moments. No, what is he worried about? That money's mine. That money's mine. That's money's mine. What good is that money? You're leaving this world. Tshuva. No. That's a sorrowful situation. He says it's more racham even on a person that thinks in his last moments about his rechush. But he says it's even more sad a person that is his whole life that's all he's thinking about is rechush. He's thinking about his possessions his whole life and lives his whole life like that. It's a story brought in the Midrash, famous Midrash said by Eliyahu Navi, in Tanya de Eliyahu, about a man that was Eliyahu met this man that he was a fisherman, and he would just he would make fun of serious things. So Eliyahu said to him, Bini, what's going to be after 120 years? What are you going to answer when they're going to be asked, how come you didn't learn Torah, or whatever? So he said, no problem. I'm going to tell Hashem, it's not my fault, you didn't give me Das. So he says, Agav, this is a classic, you know, way people are. Always, they always blame Hashem. Nothing's wrong. It's your fault, Hashem. Right? You're there. How come you didn't learn Torah? It's your fault, Hashem. You're guilty. You didn't give me Das. He says the same thing with Adam Arishon. He eats from the fruit. Hashem says, "Hey, what did you do?" So what does he say? Hayisha Asher Natata Yimadi. Hashem, it's your fault. You gave me this woman, and she gave. Always being Mashim Hashem. So they say a cute tongue in cheek. It's we say in benching. Harachaman Huyanchilenu Yom Shakulo Shabbos Umnucha Lachay Holamim. So what's the idea? He says, "Rachaman hu yanchilin yom shakulo Shabbos." That's the future in the time of the Mashiach. In that time, there's going to be no yetzer hara. Once there's no yetzer hara, so people aren't going to blame Hashem anymore. They're not going to do a vera, so they're not going to blame Hashem. So therefore, it's going to be menucha, peace l'chay olamim to Hashem. Finally, Hashem's going to have some peace and quiet. Because until then, we're always blaming Hashem for this, blaming Hashem for that. Finally, it'll be menucha l'chay olamim. It's going to be menucha for Hashem. Anyway, so he asks, what's your malacha? And he says, I'm a fisherman. So he says, and who taught you how to do all these things? He goes, Baruch Hashem, you know, I know how to do these things, how to make nets, and how to fish, and how to... So he said, well, that you have seichel for, but for learning Torah, you don't have seichel for? Lefech, it says, karov alecha davar meod, befivcha vavcha lasoso, that the lefech, the Torah is close to you, dafka. And that you don't have das for? So it says he cried and cried and cried and cried. And then Eliyahu told him, listen, you should know that everybody's like you. You know, they contradict themselves. They say, no, I can't do this, I can't do that. Meanwhile, they do other things very nicely. The exact things that they say that they can't do. He says, cute maestro, then with this, he once visited a gvir to get some money from him, a donation. And he says, he came to his house, and he goes, it wasn't a house, it was a castle. It was a humongous mansion. So he asked him for a donation, and what does the guy tell him? He says, Zmanim kashim. He says, times are tough, what can I tell you, Rebbe? Maybe another time. We'll give you some other time, I ask him. So Rav Galinsky said to him, okay, fine. I wasn't able to mezaka you in the mitzvot tzedaka, so maybe I can tell you a vort. So he says, oh, it's no problem, Rebbe. You know, that doesn't cost him anything. You know, sure. Tell me a vort. He says, okay. He says, there's a Gemara in Bracha, stuff, Gimel and Beis. It says that in the morning, Kevin Shamadalu Amud HaShachar, Nichnusu Chachmei Yisrael Itzel David HaMelech. The Chachamim would come to David HaMelech, and they would say to him, Adoneinu HaMelech, Amcha Yisrael Tzrichim Parnasa. He says, your nation needs a Parnasa. In other words, there's no Parnasa to be had. So Amar Lahem, what does David answer them? L'chu vis parnasu, Zem Yisrael. So make parnasa between each other. They said back to David, Eina komets maspia esari. It's not enough. A little bit of the food doesn't satisfy in a line. In other words, mashal, it's not enough. So then he told them, L'chu pishtu yadechem bigdud. If that's the case, so go out to the milchama, make a war. So he says, it's difficult to understand. They said that there is no Parnassa. So what did he answer? L'chuvit Parnassu zemizeh. But they said there's no Parnassa to be had, so why didn't make Parnassa amongst each other? But they said that there's no Parnassa, number one. And since they told him there's no Parnassa, that's basically saying that there's no, whatever there is not enough to satiate the lion. And that's what basically he told him. So why did he have to say to them, oh, why don't you meet Parnas from each other? And then they had to say, oh, the little bit doesn't satiate the lion. This was all known already. What's going on over here? And secondly, he says, what's this eighth of going out to war? He says, war is a very dangerous thing. There can be casualties, and who says you're going to win? Yeah, go out to war, and you'll have Parnassa. Who says you're going to have Parnassa? That's if you win. Maybe you're not going to win, etc. So what's this? What was he telling him, go out to war? So the rich man said, good question. I hear. So he said, let me tell you what the Chibinu Rav, how he explains this Gemara. He says, when the Chachmei Yisrael came to David HaMelech, and they said, you know, we need Parnassa. So the Chor, this is, well, what is that? That shouldn't be a problem. Why? Because we have a rule that ain't anios but tzibur. Whenever there's a tzibur, there's no poverty amongst the tzibur. An individual can be poor, but in general, you have the whole tzibur, and there's an ain't anios but tzibur. So what's the problem? Let each person help each other or whatever, and then say, oh, and that's what David Melech said. What do you mean? There's no parnasa? Ain't any of betzivers. Therefore, lechuvis parnasus emizeh. It's the, you know, the rich people have the poor people, and then there'll be a parnasa for everybody. So what did they answer, Rebbe? Should be the case. But the problem is, ain't a komets maspia tzari. The rich people are saying times are tough. Come back another time. We don't have money now. Whatever. They're not giving. In a kumitz mespia tzari means they're not giving. It would be, they should, and everything would work out. But they're just not giving. So therefore, David HaMelech in his chokhmah, what does he say? He says, yeah, okay. So let's tell him to go to war. L'chu pishtu yadechem b'gdud. Tell him to go out to war. What is that going to do? When they go out to the war, what's going to be? You're going to get to the front lines, and then the Kohen's going to call out, "Mi eish asher bana bayis chadash v'lo chanacha yalech v'yashav." Who built the house and was on mechanech? Go back! And all of a sudden, we're going to see a whole bunch of people going back. Oh, looks like you do have money. You just built yourself a nice house or whatever. Mi eish asher nata kerem v'lo chilalu yalech v'yashav v'yashav. Who made a kerem? And then more people are going to leave. Oh, now all of a sudden you have money for a kerem. That you have money for. But you don't have money for... he said, make a milchama, because that will show people that the stira, how they're kind of, they don't have money, and then they'll be forced to open up their pockets. Shvi al zoiche. to avoid the stirot in our actions, and in the month of tshuva, should we all zoicha to be do tshuva shlema, not at the end of our days, but kol yom v'yom, yu begadecha levanim, we should be zoicha to tshuva shlema every day, and as a result, be zoicha to coming of Mashiach Tzidkenu, v'mehir v'yameinu.